I want to say also, too, before I get on to it, I want to get on to the thing about the immigration here, because you led me into a topic I wanted to talk about.
Oh,
but
yeah.
as far as it goes with the cable news people and everything like that, this story this week of the White House banning Caitlin Collins of CNN because they didn't like the questions she was asking, which, again, I think she was asking questions that were fine. Here's the interesting thing about this. And, again, I think she's an excellent reporter, and her analysis, whenever I've seen her on TV, I've never really questioned or anything like that. Here's the irony is that they're banning somebody who, and I think where she used to work is actually indicative of her real point of view, which you would never get on air. Do you know where she used to work before CNN?
No, I've never heard of her.
Okay. Colin, she used to be the White House reporter for the Daily Caller. So this shows you.
Oh, really?
Yes. So she is a very, very fair person, because I believe, from what I know, her working at the Daily Caller is indicative of, you know, what her true, again, all reporters have sympathies, feelings, whatever. So, exactly. Everybody has a point of view. And that, from what I know, it's her point of view, but it's like you'd never know it from watching her on TV. And I think that that shows you that she is a magnificent reporter, because she is tough on the Trump administration, even though she might be more sympathetic deep down to some of the things that they... I'm sure she's more sympathetic, because I think a lot of the people in the room are unsympathetic, but I mean, it's a thing where...
working as someone who has worked with movement conservatives in the past, being around them may not make you more sympathetic.
Well, that's a good point. But I just want to say, I think it just proves her objectivity, the fact she got banned from the White House for a day, because I just wanted to give her a shout-out for that, because I think she's a fine reporter. But this thing about the immigration thing here, here's another thing here, too, that I talked about the media, how I think they may somewhat be falling in it. Not necessarily falling into Trump's trap, because, like I said, they're gonna be a part of getting him in the end. But he's gonna drag them down with him to whatever degree. And it's a thing where
All I know is that the approval, like when they pull people out of immigration now, the numbers are higher than they've been in a decade.
Well, immigration,
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about. How this thing with immigration is going to drag the media down.
No. You missed my point.
Okay.
I'm in a segue.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. Yeah, segue alert.
Sorry.
No, but how I think Trump is going to try and use it to boomerang on the Democrats. I was alluding to Trump and the media. I'm pivoting to Trump and the Democrats, and that the Trump administration has been fairly overt in that their reelect strategy comes right out of 1972, acid, amnesty, and abortion. And it's a thing where...
Not bad.
Exactly. And that's my point, Colin, is that Nixon won reelection on caricaturing the other side successfully, and it's a thing where...
Yeah.
Here's the thing. The Democrats, and I say this, again, as somebody who actually believes in borders and sovereignty and whatever, I say this begrudgingly, but yes, the Democrats have the high moral ground because of how this went and the way that it was butchered and everything like that. But this is indicative of, in this moment, you look at Joe Crowley being, you know, deposed in New York there from Congress by a Democratic socialist. The energy in the Democratic Party clearly is on the far left, and it's a thing where this whole thing of like, here's the thing, abolish ICE. That is the thing. Let me tell you something. If Trump could go to sleep dreaming of something soundly every night, it would be of every rally in America having many abolish ICE signs, because that is where you will lose the sympathy of the American people. Trump wants the left to overreach, and I see them to whatever degree falling into his trap, because to use that, if abolishing ICE becomes a litmus test in the Democratic Party, good luck with that.
I wish I could remember where it was. There was a great article just a couple of days ago about this false equivalence thing. Let's look at the woman in Queens.
Yes.
Fantastically talented, obviously.
Yes.
Worked her tail off. Crowley was coasting. When he first started representing the district, it was more like an old immigrant neighborhood, right? You know, more you know, white European immigrants,
right?
Like Italian, Polish, Jewish, that kind of thing. Now it's like 60-70% Puerto Rican. You know, the neighborhood's changed. He was out of south of the neighborhood, super low turnout primary. She beat him. Good on her. Across the country, we haven't seen anything like it. There is no evidence left the activists who were trying to push this stuff. And I'm glad that they're getting these ideas out there. Wow, universal health care becoming a thing that's being talked about again. What a great idea. If you think that the Democratic Party is going to splinter between now and November, you're crazy.
No, that's, once again.
And honestly, there are only so many old white people you can piss off. They're dying.
Right. But
that was overly lighthearted. Demographic change is happening, that there isn't that middle anymore. The person you're trying to appeal to is likely a divorced mother of two in the Atlanta suburbs who's, if she's white, she's probably one of her friends is married to a black man. Right? It is a different world now.
Old white people are dying off. Could you try to sound moderately sad when you say that, Colin? Could you throw me that bone? Well, here's
it is a way of life is disappearing. Yes, so, cohort replacement is going on.
Right.
I will be next.
Well,
50 in a year. So, but it's just that Trump's riling up his base. His base can't get any more riled up. If anything, they seem to be burning out.
Right.
And everything he does just makes one, oh my God, you should have seen the mothers in my life the other day when more of these stories about these. I tell you what, man, they woke something up.
As far as what, the kids at the border, that kind of thing?
Mothers.
Mothers being riled about that? Okay.
Yeah, it's not just that, but that's the most extreme.
Okay.
But it fits into this pattern. Everything that they do has this edge of intentional cruelty in it.
Well,
and every story about that just drives another nail.
Well, I want to circle back to the point that I was trying to make, because I think you half got it, you half didn't. But what I want to I want to circle first to something I said years ago on the show, because I do want to put myself over strongly for anticipating where we're at. I think I said to you in 2012 about Mitt Romney when I complained about what a phony he was, and I said we don't have a right wing in this country anymore. It's an anti-left. And that's where we are. Trump is not the right. Trump is the anti-left. And this whole, the thing now of like owning the libs. Oh, owning the libs.
Can I reframe it slightly differently?
Go ahead.
Because I'm going to make an analogy to places like Iran.
Okay.
To places like Turkey. To places like Russia right now. The world is, like I said, the world's changing. They're not angry at the left. They're angry at modernity. They're angry at the world changing around them and then feeling left behind. If you're a white man, you used to be better than every woman and every black person,
sure.
Right? There are people who legitimately, in their minds, feel this loss of status. These towns that were thriving 30, 40 years ago are dead on their feet now, their kids don't have as many opportunities. Their grandkids don't have any opportunities. They see a culture that's radically different. I think the horrible reality TV and the horrible cable news I was talking about told you into it. There's a lot of ugliness in the culture right now. So I think that regardless of what the left does, the people who make up Trump's base are disaffected with something much bigger than politics. They're disaffected with the direction of the world. And I don't know much we can do about it, honestly.
Right.
And the other thing, it honestly doesn't matter what liberals do, because whatever we do, Fox News can always find some lunatic who'll say anything. And they'll use that to portray to their audience what the left is.
Right.
It is irrelevant what the left does.
Right.
Because Fox is going to determine what the right thinks.
But here's the thing, though, and here's what I mean by this, is that The whole construct, okay? I see this on social media all the time, and given who some of my friends are, I likely see it more than you do, okay? This thing of, what do you mean Trump isn't a successful president? Don't you see how pissed off people like Colin Delaney are? Like, Colin, that's the metric for so many people out there, and for somebody like me that cares about public policy, I'm like, when did this become the metric? I mean, as a youthful activist back in the day, okay?
Well, why do you have to be a horrible friend?
Colin.
I don't want to talk about what the left. When did it become cool? When did it become satisfying to see someone else unhappy? What the hell? What happened?
I mean, but here's the same thing, though. I mean, let's not be intellectually dishonest and say that there's not rabid hatred on both sides towards the other side.
Oh,
so
it's not a false equivalency.
I mean, you know, Colin, you know, and are probably friends with a great many people that would consider somebody like me like Hitler. Okay, so let's not say it's not on both sides.
They would not think of you like Hitler.
You probably do have. You probably
you're imposing caricatures that just aren't true.
I'd like to think that. And look, I do. Hey, I mean. You know, I do have some friends who are liberals, so there it does sort of prove there. I would say exceptions to the rule. I don't know. I think it's pretty bad on both sides. I really do think it's pretty bad on both sides, and it's a thing of like the I'm telling you, at the grassroots level in the Republican Party, if you want to call it that, whatever the case might be, the primary metric is. You know, the whole, you know, thing of drinking liberal tears. And it's like, when did we stop caring about the national debt or this or that? Or
you guys,
I'm a policy guy, Colin.
I didn't poison your political culture, your talk radio, your Fox News, not your, the right
not me personally.
the right wing media infrastructure was built to guarantee that these people felt this way. This way, because for 30 years, the right-wing media has been, I've told you before when I was working in the Texas legislature, we had a constituent 800 number, and I had a little old man who called me up to tell me what Rush Limbaugh had to say that day.
Sure.
And if I had time, I'd chat with him for a bit, you know? people have had garbage poured into their brains for 30 years, and you're gonna blame the liberals for it? I'm sorry, man.
Well...
Exactly the thing you're talking about right there. That kind of pointless hatred, that kind of keen above rationality or public good, right? That is what the Republican Party has become. And the Republican Party cannot just be beaten in one election. It has to be driven into the ground and rebuilt. The conservative movement has been poisoned. And you guys have to clean it up. You're no part of it, you know. But there is this just... poison that has been poured into people's thoughts. And personally, if there is a threat to this country that I would name mine, other than like nuclear war, asteroid attacks, or whatever, I would say this creation intentionally by people who made money from doing it, this intentional creation of a disaffected population is criminal.
Yeah, I mean,
look at that.
Well, there you go. I got to say, as far as threats to America, I mean, you're going a lot further than I am. But I will say this, circling back around, my point about Trump baiting the left was more so about 2020 than about 2018. Because here's the thing, and I'd like to think again, you and I have always been intellectually honest. There's a lot that we can agree on. You and I'm sure, look at somebody like Cory Booker, Kirsten Gillibrand, whatever, as being the quintessential sort of weather vanes, right? Look at where they're going. They're being sucked like magnets to the left.
I don't know enough. I don't have enough. I don't watch them enough to characterize them.
Okay, well, that's how I characterize them. Well, let's just say, okay, people who once cultivated images as moderates who are thinking about running for president in 2020, when I talk about, you know, this sort of litmus test list here that I think Trump is sucking them into, you don't think when it comes to 2020 that, again, you know, abolish ICE might be on there somewhere. By the way, too, $15 an hour minimum wage, universal health care, whatever, these things as they are in reality as opposed to slogans, they're I hate to burst your bubble, they're more controversial in practice than you think they are. So you,
okay.
You know.
I just know how they pull.
And that's, okay.
I know how they pull in places where they don't have them, and I know how they pull nationally.
Okay, so. Well, you know, it one would think it would flow from that. Why haven't more people been elected on it if it's so radically popular? Why did a state like Vermont tiptoe away from universal health care, you know?
It's a classic problem. The benefit is diffuse. Everybody gets a little bit of it. The harm is concentrated on a small number of people who are afraid they're going to lose money, and they're going to spend very heavily to protect their position.
And that's where we come at this a little different. I would say that there's no such thing as a free lunch.
High-wage industries do not lobby against the minimum wage, right?
Yeah.
Generally.
Yeah.
It's low-wage industries. It's McDonald's. Why don't we have a higher minimum wage? Because in cities and in states around the country, unless there is a really powerful grassroots upwelling that's going to scare a politician, the campaign contributions overwhelm it. That's why we don't have minimum wage hikes.
Well, also, I think places are starting, we talked about this a little bit before, jobs becoming redundant. The touchscreen is making politicians think a little bit more about $15 an hour minimum wage in their cities, because unless you want to pass a law against touchscreens replacing jobs, that's a slippery slope.
Yeah, I mean, the minimum wage now is functionally lower than it was like 3 or 4 decades ago, so.
It doesn't buy you much. Yeah, I mean, that's because our dollar is complete and utter shite.
If an index with inflation, it would be higher. I'm sure it would be higher than 15 bucks right now, so.
I mean,
the general economic arguments have to be garbage, right? Because
yeah, I mean.
So many places have raised it, and it doesn't make a difference.
I mean.
It's specific industries lobby very heavily against it. We saw that in D.C. with a recent ballot initiative.
So. For as much as I love modern technology, I mean, I'm so contemptuous of the modern dollar, I'd almost give everything up just to go to a time when, like, $12,000 a year, you live in the lap of luxury. I mean, buying power in this country used to be so much better than it is now. So I hear you on that. We have a high minimum wage in terms of actual dollars, but actual dollars you can pretty much wipe your ass with for buying power. So I agree with you. Yeah, I mean,
you have to have inflation.
Yeah,
right?
Well,
inflation's how you outgrow your debt, and you know,
and destroy buying power. Don't forget that part of it, but you know,
as long as you don't put your money under, are you a gold person?
I'm not a gold person.
I should
admit that my BFF is a gold bug, so I will say that. That's the hardest you've laughed today, Colin.
Oh my God! I tell you what. Oh, there's another one. You know, I end up on all these conservative email lists, right?
Uh-huh.
And it is amazing. The number of economic crisis around the corner, financial system going to crash in the last third of the year. It's only like 6 months or a year away. And they want you to download some report, and it's going to all be about buying gold,
uh-huh.
Right? That to me is another scourge on the right, is these companies that are out there taking advantage, spreading conspiracy theories, and taking advantage of it by, like, basically taking people's retirement money.
Yeah, I mean, that part of it's not good, but I mean, I will say, too, for as far as, like, you know, the prepper thing goes, which I would say my dad is sort of like lowercase p on that spectrum, but I mean, like, I mean, there are a number of scenarios where you can say, I will say this, is the threat overblown? Absolutely, but from things like, even things like Yellowstone, if it happens in our lifetime, like, there are scenarios,
yeah.
Colin, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
You can't guarantee 10 years from now. Yeah.
Maybe the difference is that, to me, the number of scenarios in which me having more than what you're supposed to have in a hurricane is going to make a material difference. If everything goes to hell.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does it matter?
Yeah, it's just, you're right. It's just a matter of how long you're going to make it. But we don't like to increase our odds however long we can.
Oh, right. The radiation sickness can get me instead of a zombie.
Well, yeah, exactly. But. There, and this is going to be an awkward segue as I go from that to an actual substantive question. Generally, I'm a little smoother in this regard, but I wanted to kind of do to bring it full circle on, because again, as I indicated, there is a rich tapestry of our conversations over the years here. I believe going back to about 2010, it might be 09, but I know it was at least 2010. And I know, and particularly in Obama's first term, I know that there was a little bit of impatience on your part as far as what you saw, as far as, I guess, his cautiousness on going far enough on certain issues or whatever. And I remember saying to you at the time, you know, I think at the very least he's planting seeds that are, you know, substantive and not in a way that I like as somebody who is not left-wing. But I said at the time, I think from your perspective you are unduly pessimistic. I look at it now, I go back to what I said before about where the energy is at on the left side of the spectrum and on these issues and whatever, and I look at that and again, I don't feel good about this because I regard this as a pessimistic prediction that came true, but I think Obama, when you look at culturally, I think he had a lot to do with, you know, where the country went as far as the quick acceptance of gay marriage and everything like that. The economics, all these things. I said I thought that Obamacare, I thought that he was laying the groundwork for eventual universal health care, because I think he figured that the contradictions in Obamacare would lead, you know, on the road towards single payer. So these things that are happening, these are seeds I feel that he planted, and it was sort of an intentional thing. And like I said, I don't regard it as a great thing, but I regard it as a genius thing from his point of view. Do you subscribe to that point of view that you were perhaps wrong about that, and that where Obama, that he led us to the greater growth on the left that we're seeing today?
Well, here's the thing. He only had 2 years to do anything.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
And in that time, he got a lot done, you know, saving the auto industry. Helping to avoid a depression, little minor things. And, you know, Obamacare, I don't think anybody saw Obamacare as anything but, God, can we move the ball another 20 yards, right? You say single payer, you know, most places that have universal health care don't have single payer. There's three different ways to do it. But the idea is that people don't die in the streets of preventable illnesses and disease, right? That we all have a chance at a healthy, happy life, right? Not a bad idea. It's also cost less per person than our current system. But that's the story for another day. I think just Obamacare was designed to move the ball as much as they could move it. I wish they got more done on the financial regulation. You know, these financial institutions that are just basically gambling, they are so big that it was the term of our regulatory capture. They basically make policy if we're not careful.
Sure.
And I would like for there to have been more. You know, we talked about Glass-Steagall and all that in the past, you know.
Right.
But regardless of that, we did get a lot done. Where I think, you know, in foreign policy, I don't know if there was a good course in Syria or not. I'm not going to try to second-guess anybody. There are a lot of places in the world where I wish we'd been more forward. From the point of view of the Democratic Party, as an institution, he was a disaster. Debbie Wasserman Schultz did very little to advance the party in any meaningful way. Basically, political parties exist to funnel money and to build capacity, right?
Right.
And she didn't build any capacity. All she did was funnel money and try to funnel it to people that she thought were the way to go. Hillary, for example. Not so much funneling money there, but, you know, whatever.
Favors.
We all know. We all know. I mean, I don't think the DNC made the slightest bit of difference in that. But we all know where she was.
Absolutely.
Democrats fell to the lowest level of state legislative seats. And you know I worked in a state legislature.
Sure.
State legislative seats.
You've mentioned that once or twice.
Yeah, the House, you know, all these things. And I think part of it was Obama being this oddly self-created man, another self-created man like Trump, right?
Uh-huh.
But you know, concerned with his part in history and not as much. Like, and I think that there were other parts on the nuts and bolts of politics where he really set back the prospects for things that he would have wanted. For instance, that the Republicans did not have to win the Senate back in 2014. You know, there were things that could have been done, and that is where I'm really disappointed with him.
Okay.
The upside is that I think that the shock of Trump has made people take public service and policy seriously. There are a lot of people who have become, on the not just the left, but just in the world, who have become disaffected, and this shocked them. So I think it is so healthy that there are so many veterans running as Democrats. Mm-hmm. A lot of veterans in their 30s. So we're talking veterans, people who were just shooting at people a few years ago. Not chicken hawks, right?
Sure.
A lot of women. And, you know, I think the closer we get to a 50-50 ratio in politics, the less crooked and healthier our politics are going to be. A lot of men in a room does not usually end that well.
Well, you know, different perspectives always add more. I mean, that part of it is definitely true, regardless of what...
I think men are corrupt. Men that get elected to office are way more like... I'm curious. I have watched it close up. I think the men who are elected to office are much more likely to be crooked than the women who are elected to office. I'm not going to say anything about the broader population, but from the politicians that I've mean, I think that's a fair characterization. But anyway, it's,
well, at the risk of sounding like one of these incels with their women be cray type stuff, you know, I will say, you know, you do risk oversimplifying. Let's just say our gender isn't responsible for every last evil in the world. I'll leave it at that.
No, that's not what I said.
Okay.
Well, I've worked in all male environments, and I went from an almost all male environment, basically a frat house of a communications firm, over to a women's organization. I went from the frat house to the convent.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, both extremes are unhealthy.
Yeah.
And your average state house has been, you know, 99% men forever.
Well, and, you know, I can say for me personally, there's a tie for the best boss that I've ever had and a tie for the worst boss I've ever had, and you guessed it, they're split by gender both ways. So you cannot, you know, you cannot oversimplify on that kind of stuff. But yeah, I wanted to get your thoughts on that because of, again, this whole thing of how Obama's even going to factor into 2020 with the Democratic race. He is unlikely to be directly involved in the primaries, but you know, his part, his legacy is going to be certainly debated going forward. But again, there is always so much to debate and analyze in this day and age. And a year and a half into Trump, I mean, the only common denominator to our conversations is that, you know, I like to think that we are at a consistently high level of analysis and entertainment no matter what.
Absolutely.
But it gets easier and easier the deeper into the Trump presidency. Like, I don't feel like we ever had to hunt for material when Obama was in office, but the low-hanging fruit is ever more prevalent in the Trump years and where it is and where it's going. And I will just say in closing here that I have to get in a plug and a shot at media oversimplification. This whole thing about, you know, Russia and everything like that, everybody making out Rand to be, he's the ultimate Trump sycophant. Yeah, also the guy with, granted, probably still high 70s, but the lowest percentage of voting with Trump of any of the Republicans in the Senate. My guy calls balls and strikes the way he sees them. He's with Trump when he agrees with him. He disagrees with him on other issues. He voted against the CIA chief in there, so again, the overly the overly simplistic prisms that we attach to people, Colin. Hopefully, we can agree broadly on that. The overly simplistic labels we put on people, because again, some people at least are more complex than the caricatures. Most of the guys in Congress, not so much, but some of them, at least, are. I like to think my guy is, from my point of view. But when it comes to great political segments here, you are always my guy, Colin Delaney. It is always a pleasure to have you on and to, from our different points of view here, break this stuff down. Because, like I said, it's only getting to be more and more interesting. And whatever the next interval of having you on is, I can't even freaking imagine the stuff we're going to be talking about then.
We'll be having it from Mars.
We might well be either that or from our nuclear fallout shelters. One never knows. You know.
Yeah, I do live in my apartment is a little bunker-like. So I'll have to drop my mind.
My condo is not even remotely radiation safe, my man. So I'll be in the first wave of people to die from the thermonuclear war that so many in Congress seem to want to have with Russia. And God forbid we get there. If this is my last time talking to you before our politicians provoke us into global war, Colin, it's been real.
It's been a pleasure, sir.
It's been outstanding. I thank you so much yet again. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 1005.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.